Welcome back to the Fostering Financial Victories podcast. I'm Eric, your host. Thanks for joining us again. Today, I am joined by Bob Taylor, who is a CFA analyst. He's a really smart guy on our team. He and I are going to try and tackle a review of how the stock market has performed and behaved all this year. So, should be fun, should be interesting. Tell everybody kind of how you got into the role that you're in. Give us a little bit of background.
I'm portfolio manager with Foster Victor. I've been in the business, financial services, since the early 1980s. Kind of got my start on Wall Street on different trading desks, and then transitioned back over to the investment management side of the business. So no longer trading desk, but got into investment management. So I was a research analyst in Boston for a number of years, and I then got recruited to come down here by my former employer to be a portfolio manager. I was straightened out very, very early on as to what the difference was between a Yankee and a Northerner.
Okay.
And I like to think that I'm a Northerner. At least I'm told that that's what I am. So it's great to be here. I love South Carolina. You know, I enjoy my role.
Looking into the markets for 2021.
Here we go.
Kind of an interesting day yesterday.
Yes.
So as we got into the first quarter, and just kind of give everybody some structure, we're going to break this out by quarters just to talk through different phases of the year. So in the first quarter of this year, what are some highlights that kind of stood out to you?
Well, what really kind of stood out to me is you know, we kind of went into this recovery phase in the economy. And I think that was, you know, certainly led by not only the stimulus starting to take effect and you know, reach people's pocketbooks, but also with the vaccine rollout. People, you know, started putting money back into the economy. The economy started recovering. You know, as we moved on, people were going back to work, spending a little bit more other than just on, you know, toilet paper and paper towels and that type of thing.
Yeah, so the sector,
that type of stuff. Yeah,
so the segments that did fairly well coming out of the gate in January, February, kind of unusual.
Value was a better performing, you know, style of investing, you know, really over, you know, the kind of like the final few months of 2020 and then into the first quarter of 2021. And, you know, really growth that outperformed value really over the past decade, with few exceptions. All right, so, you know, growth stocks had just, you know, really, really done well, and value was kind of like the second sister.
Sure.
And then as, you know, this transition occurred, this growth to value rotation, we saw, you know, growth stocks solidly outperform. Energy, financials, industrials, materials, all started to do better in anticipation of a recovering economy. And, you know, really the outperformance, I think, was, you know, something like 10%. And that was like the, you know, the highest level in a number of years.
So the energy companies that did really well in the first quarter of the
oil companies. Yeah.
Yeah. Mainly just reopening of the markets in general.
Right.
Right. The demand. What changed in quarter two?
Well, you know, I think in quarter two, you started to see, you know, a little more rotation back to that growth trade.
Yeah, it was almost like it flipped on its head.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, the economy certainly, I think it transitioned, I think, in quarter two from you know, more recovery to more expansion. And, you know, then, you know, the companies at the top of the stack, your Googles, your Apples, your Microsofts, you know, they're really going to kill it in an expanding economy. And they certainly did. And there was certainly that rotation back to the growth trade. And, you know, markets tend to go through cycles with those shifts. And, you know, investors certainly that were levered to growth, you know, did really well in the second quarter.
So with the Federal Reserve kind of being front and center, mainly what feels like since about March.
Yep.
At least on the topic of conversation consistently. Mm-hmm. What happened towards the first and second quarter that Did they make any adjustments there, or did they make any statements that the market interpreted as being bullish or bearish?
Well, I think in Q1, what the Fed was doing was they were letting everybody know they have two mandates. All right, first mandate really guarantee full employment, right? So, or not guarantee, but do their best to support, you know, mm-hmm. labor markets to full employment. And the other mandate is to control prices. So I think what they said early, and inflation has been, you know, really low for a great number of years. And I think that what they said was they were willing to let inflation run hot for a few quarters, all right, and really focus on the jobs market and try to provide enough monetary stimulus that would flow into the system and give companies the confidence that they would begin hiring back employees. So, you know, they were really supporting job growth in the first quarter and, you know, at the expense of inflation. And you saw that inflation numbers started, you know, turning, you know, up a little bit hot. So as the second quarter evolved, you know, you get to June and they have the FOMC meeting at the end of June. And what they kind of came out with was unexpected at the time. And they have this dot plot where all the Fed governors get in there and so what their expectations are for interest rates and, you know, in the future. And during the stimulus period, they had gone through this extraordinary monetary policy where they were purchasing a very, very large number of government securities and agency securities and mortgages. And they were purchasing, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of this stuff. And that's providing the monetary stimulus. And what, you know, this dot plot showed was, hey, you know, we think that we're going to have to start raising interest rates in 2023. Seems like a long way off, but still markets, remember, it's a discounting mechanism. So we're looking forward.
Okay.
And what the market wasn't expecting that to happen, two interest rate cut hikes that were in this dot plot that nobody expected that would be there, you know, in June of 2021. Because we were still, I mean, the economy wasn't back to full force yet,
sure.
Right? So it kind of caught everybody off guard. You know, markets took a little bit of a dip. Interest rates had spiked higher. I think the spread between the 10 and 2 year treasury expanded by, you know, 0.8%. Right after that meeting. And essentially what that means is the yield curve shifted higher. And, you know, still it's a good thing, because what you want in a steeper yield curve, it shows that the economy is recovering and getting stronger. So after kind of an initial shock, all right, you know, everybody sits back and just says, okay, you know what, this is good. And the Fed is recognizing that at some point down the road, we're going to have to take our pedal off, our foot off the pedal in terms of monetary stimulus. So, you know, the front end of the yield curve was still anchored at, you know, basically zero, because they said, you know, we're not doing that now. It's a future thing. So yield curve shifts up, a little bit of a shock, but, you know, we certainly got through it.
And as we closed quarter two, you know, everything was pretty much at record high.
Yeah. Markets were, you know,
even
again,
through
flying.
All that.
Yep. You know, a little bit of, you know, little pause in April. All right. And then May and June were pretty strong, and markets were, you know, just sitting there at or near record all time highs at that point in time. But what we started to see was, you know, some cracks underneath the surface. But what I mean by that is leadership was narrowing. And
what do you mean by that?
Okay. So typically when stocks are at all-time highs or there's a durable market advance going on, what you see is it's pretty much broad participation. So a lot of stocks are participating in the rally. The Big Five have accounted for 71% of the S&P's advance year to date.
Wow!
So that's a big number.
Yeah, that's a huge.
So that you know, that started back then. We kind of started to see less and less stocks participating in rallies.
Okay, so in quarter three, you know, you just mentioned some of the transitions that were taking place. We saw a pretty big jump with some commodity areas.
Yep.
the most notable one percentage wise was that natural gas had a 34% monthly gain.
Yeah, I know.
In
right?
the third quarter. Yep.
Yeah. That's and I think you know, some of that has to do with the hurricane outages and everything else, but that's a big increase, and it was even worse in Europe.
Yeah,
just you know, the natural gas prices just absolutely exploded, and you really saw that across the entire commodity complex. You know, certainly you know, fossil fuels and so on, but you know, oil was, you know, $70 a barrel, and it wasn't all that long ago that, you know, oil was below zero.
It was negative.
It was negative, all right? So in other words, if you're an oil producer, what you had to do is pay somebody to take your oil.
Yeah,
so it wasn't like you, you know.
That was 2020.
Here's, I've got this tanker here. I'm going to pay you.
Yeah, you take it.
You take
and you
it.
Sell it.
Well, there was nowhere to put it. That was, right. That was the problem. The world was awash in oil and there was no place to store it. And that's why they went negative. So, you know, absolutely, it didn't take all that long that, you know, oil's back at $70 a barrel. And that has implications on, you know, rising cost pressures.
So quarter three, you know, let's the elephant in the room there, there's two pieces there. Mm-hmm. Inflation's starting to creep into more conversations.
Yep.
And now people are starting to talk about supply chain issues.
Right.
On more of a mainstream level.
Right. Well, and what had happened there, I think the rebound in the economic recovery happened a lot faster than everybody thought it'd be. So the stimulus started to take effect. Back in 2020, the money was just sitting there. Velocity of money was really, really slow. And then as we, you know, went through first 6 months and into the third quarter of 2021, you know, the velocity of money starts picking up. And, you know, it's placing demand on the supply chain. And, you know, people are not everybody's back to work, you know, say what have you. So there were shortages everywhere. And, you know, you saw it in, you know, chips, really, that was very, very pronounced. And, you know, inflation was running, you know, two percentage points, you know, above the trend line back in, you know, that started before COVID. Mm-hmm. So if you drew a forward-looking trend of inflation, it was running about two percentage points hot. And really the heat was all in the, you know, due to the car sector, automotive sector, you know, used car prices, new cars, and, you know, reason being is they couldn't get chips. And what you also saw is, you know, remember we saw, you know, boats, you know, parked off the port of, you know, Los Angeles and port of Santa Barbara, just sitting out there and waiting to be unloaded.
And you kind of still do.
Yeah, you're still seeing that.
Yeah.
But it really, you know, really came into focus.
Yeah. People started noticing it.
Yep. People started noticing. And, you know, again, you're placing upward pressure on prices, and, you know, the market's starting to wake up a little bit to, you know, hey, the Fed had always maintained that inflation was transitory. All right. And second quarter, third quarter, what the Fed believed was transitory inflation, that it would kind of roll over because most of the excess inflation was being driven by automotive problems in the automotive space due to shortage of chips. They felt that once we got into 2022, you know, inflation would roll over, and kind of markets were believing that, because if you looked at inflation break evens, it kind of showed that, you know, inflation was accelerating in 2021, but if you look forward into 2022 and beyond, it had rolled over and went back down. So the market was believing that inflation was transitory. You're seeing that, you know, the belief is now that the inflation could be even stickier. Then the market pulled back in its September. And what was kind of interesting about it was a 5 or 6% pullback. But a lot, and this goes back to that participation, you know, theme that we were mentioning before, about 70% of the S&P 500 had actually, you know, had experienced a 10% correction at one point during the course of the year. So there was this 5% pullback, but really a lot of stocks had already, you know, experienced or were down more than 10%. And that was, again, you know, the big guys, the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, none of those stocks had pulled back that severely. And, you know, was it a correction? You know, I don't know. What I look at it, the way I see it was more of a consolidation, because I think the market was expecting that, you know, Q3 earnings, which we're talking the end of September, mm-hmm. right? When this happened, you know, earnings season starts, you know, second week of October. I think what the market was consolidating prior to what it expected to be a very, very strong earnings season, Q3 earnings season at the start of Q4.
Yeah, so that takes us into the next topic with, you know, some of the reactions that you've seen as these companies have reported earnings over the last 6 or 7 weeks.
Right, right.
You know, we talked a little bit about this as we were preparing for this discussion. You know, most recently was, you know, the one that caught a lot of people's attention was DocuSign.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So can you talk about, I mean, I would think DocuSign has done extremely well with everybody working remotely.
Right.
Seems
it was a stay-at-home stock.
Seems like
right.
a no-brainer.
Right, right.
So what happened?
So Q3 earnings were fantastic. All right. Companies like 84% of the S&P 500 were reported earnings that beat expectations. Something like, I don't know, 75 beat on revenue. It was 33% year-over-year earnings growth. I mean, earnings were compressed back in, you know, in 2020. But it was, you know, just an incredible earnings season across the board. And, you know, DocuSign had a strong third quarter. I mean, put up. They're not earning money right now, but they generate a lot of cash. You have to remember, we have been in a period of low interest rates, and low interest rates, and you know, super expanding profit margins means high stock valuations. So, and when you have a high stock valuation, analysts, what they like to, you know, street analysts like consistency. All right. So here's, you know, expectations get built in into those valuations. And if a company comes out and says, you know, our fourth quarter earnings might not be as strong as what the analysts have projected them to be, you can get taken to the woodshed.
That's exactly what happened.
And DocuSign, I think the stock was down 40% in one day, like 40% of its value because they thought Q3 might not be as strong as
in one trading session.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah, that's insane. And again, that's a function of valuations being very, very high. All right, and the expectation by street analysts that your success is going to continue.
So really, they got punished for right. an unknown yet.
Right, right. Same thing happened to PayPal.
Yeah.
All right, PayPal had a fantastic third quarter. You know, record earnings. You know, again. What's PayPal? It's a payment service.
Yep.
All right. And what they said was, you know, we think in Q4, you know, the economy is going to continue to reopen, and our customer base who had, you know, in the past, you know, six to nine months had used our service to purchase, is probably now going to go back out and do it, you know, and go visit the brick and mortar store. And so our fourth quarter is probably going to be a little bit lower than expectation. What happens there?
They got throttled.
Boom.
Yeah.
You know, and you get eviscerated again. And again, that's what happens if expectations are high and you don't meet expectations, you know, you get taken to the woodshed.
I know it sounds like we're beating up on these two companies, but
the great companies are performing. I mean, really, it's just a function of where we were. And that's a low interest rate environment. Companies that, you know, have done really, really well. And the expectation is that's going to continue in the future. And it can't.
Yeah, you know, the bright component of the fourth quarter is of the companies that reported earnings, 84%.
Yeah,
exceeded.
It beat expectations, right?
What's normal? That seems way out on the right.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, what? 60?
Probably not 84%.
Not 84%.
75% beat revenue.
And
really high.
Really high. And again, what's happening is you have this, you know, acceleration and in the economy, rapid expansion because it went from zero. Mm-hmm. And, you know, companies, at least on the earnings side, remember what they're able to do is, you know, we're seeing some higher costs, but because the demand was there, they were able to pass the higher costs onto their client base and their customer base. So that supported margins and that flows right down to earnings. So,
sure.
you know, you saw the numbers were, you know, 75% beat on the revenue number, 85% call it, beat on the earnings side. So that means, you know, there was, you know, revenue, but they were able to pass along the costs. Revenue was not quite as high as it was what expectations were, but they were able to pass along the costs, maintain margins, and hit the ball out of the ballpark earnings wise.
Got it. All right. So in the fourth quarter, we have also seen some pretty interesting IPOs that have taken place. Have caught some people's attention.
Well, you know, the one thing is you know, you talk about company Rivian. All right. So they're making electronic truck vehicles. And, you know, this company, you know, went public at $78. The stock, I think, went as high as 179, 180. All right. And that was supported a market cap of, I don't know, 100 and let's call it $140 billion. So just give you, put that into context. And these are not obviously car companies. But, you know, Goldman and Blackstone are in that range market cap wise. All right. So they said that, you know, the market valued Rivian at the same kind of, you know, market cap, market value as Blackstone and Goldman, just to name two companies that we all know.
Pretty incredible.
So it's incredible. So the what makes it really interesting is that they kind of, this is a term that I saw that I hadn't seen before. Rivian is a pre-revenue company.
What does that even mean?
They have no revenue.
Right.
All right. So they have not sold a truck yet. All right. So it's a concept. And I think people, you know, investors that may have missed out on kind of the other electronic vehicle company, Tesla, saw this and say, well, you know, can hop on this board. But, you know, if you think about it, at $150 billion market cap, you're discounting an awful lot of electronic trucks that are, you know, going to be sold over the next few years. And they have not generated $1 in revenue yet. Obviously, no earnings. Hmm. So if you think about this, if you think about the analog back to, and I'm not saying Rivian is like the companies I'm about to mention, but if you think about the analog back to the dot-com bubble, MCI, WorldCom, Enron, Adelphia Communications, these companies, they had to manufacture their earnings. They had to, you know, cheat on their earnings and engage in underhanded things to achieve these, you know, really excess market cap valuations back in those days. So they had to lie about it. This company can come out and get $140 billion market cap, and they don't have anything. They don't have any revenue. So we don't have any revenue. And the market just says, well, here you go. We'll assign this value to you.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Not the same.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
And
they may kind of, they may do well. They may do great.
Well, right. We don't know. But it's going to take a while. All right. And they're not going to make money for a number of years. Tesla really doesn't make any money now.
Right.
They just make, they sell their tax credits, and that's where, you know, that's what kind of flows to the bottom line. They don't make money on the vehicle. To make money on the tax credit. Hmm. So,
all right. So as we start to close the year, yesterday was a big deal with the Fed meeting. So as we kind of go into what to expect for 2022, talk through what happened yesterday.
Well, the Fed pulled off a really great move. I think only the government can accelerate a slowdown. And that's what they did. They accelerated a slowdown. So
I don't know if I can wrap my head around what you said.
See, the government could do anything.
They accelerated a slowdown.
Okay. Yeah, they accelerated a slowdown. So what they said they do, they've engaged in this asset purchase program, which injects liquidity into the system to the tune of $140 billion a month. All right, and they have been doing that for a while. And then last month at the last Fed meeting, what they said, we're going to start tapering those purchases. So they reduced it by $15 billion. And market's okay with that, you know. And essentially what they're going to do is they were targeting the middle of next year to completely end that asset purchase, but the monetary stimulus piece, all right? And then that kind of would set the stage for them to start raising rates at some point in the future. And now, as they kind of if you go back to the day after Thanksgiving, which was a Black Friday event, two things kind of, you know, affected us back there. One was the new variant of the virus. But I think what was more important, at least for domestic markets, was that Chairman Powell came out and kind of said that there might be a scenario where we are going to purchase less bonds sooner. So or we're going to accelerate the taper or accelerate the slowdown in our asset purchases. And yesterday's news, they came out and confirmed that. So they're reducing their purchase rate by, you know, $30 billion.
So as we go into 22, you know, you're seeing some of the internal numbers on the market shifting a little bit.
Yep.
Because of the fear of the interest rates being adjusted. Is that kind of the biggest thing?
You're seeing less companies participate in the upside.
Yeah.
I think, you know, only 30% of the S&P 500 is trading above the 50-day moving average now. If you look at the NASDAQ, is, you know, certainly top weighted. It's a broad index. There's a lot of companies in the NASDAQ. I think it's really a great barometer of the complete economy. S&P 500 is the 500 largest stocks in the economy. NASDAQ is broader.
Sure.
Because there's, you know, it incorporates, you know, a lot of smaller companies and so on. But I think, you know, X the big five, the NASDAQ would be down 23% right now.
Without them?
Without them.
Wow.
You know, you don't include their performance in there. It would be down 20-odd percent in there. So, you know, as we go forward into next year, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about is that, you know, is that participation, you know, how is that going to rectify? All right. How's that going to work itself out? So, you know, underneath the surface, you see, you're seeing, you know, this broader weakness, and yet the markets are still trading, you know, somewhat near, we're off a little bit, but somewhat relatively near all-time highs. Or is that bifurcation going to hold? My sense is that probably growth will be lower next year. And if that happens, you know, it's certainly going to affect those big guys too.
Sure.
All right. So, you know, where we had, 20% returns in the marketplace this year, maybe next year things will be a little bit more muted. And, you know, let's say, you had this 33% year-over-year earnings growth. So that's a really big number.
Well, yeah, right? You got to think through, though. 2020, the earnings were so
depressed,
dropped down because people were shut down.
Right.
And then this year we haven't had that. So how are you going to beat this year?
Is it next really, year? It's like, going to be really hard.
It's going to be a little bit tougher.
It's going to be really hard.
Let's leave it there. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Sure.
You get the two questions.
Yeah.
If you could buy anything in the world, regardless of cost, what would it be?
I would buy a 1959 Gibson Les Paul.
Okay. You're showing some culture here. All right. And then
that's what I would buy.
Last two things you spent money on.
Last two things, Christmas gifts for my wife.
Okay. Don't tell her what it is.
No.
All right. So.
Well, she knows one of them because it was Amazon delivered it and it wasn't boxed.
All right. Bob, thanks for spending some time with us. Taking time out of your busy day. Thanks for joining us. If you've got questions or concerns or suggestions on topics that you'd like for us to cover, you can reach us through our website at fostervictor.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at Foster Victor Wealth Advisors. Thanks again. Have a great day.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Information contained in this podcast was intended for general use, not to be used as specific advice. For content tailored to your personal situation, please contact one of our wealth coaches.